I'm super happy. Are you happy? Welcome to the Be You, Find Happy podcast. Here you'll find tips and tricks to inspire you on your way to happiness, to live a courageous life of authenticity, and learn how to speak your truth with grace. I'm Michaela Johnson, and welcome to our podcast. Have you ever been curious about the tarot and how it works to provide insight to your life? Today, I have Richard, a tarot expert, who is going to talk to you all about the wonders of tarot. And he is so incredibly knowledgeable on this subject, you guys. He is just going to blow your mind with the backstories dating all the way back to the 1400s when these oracle cards were originally created. And not only that, but he does a spontaneous reading for me over the podcast. I can't wait for you to hear it.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the Be You, Find Happy podcast.
Well, thank you very much.
And I'm truly really excited for my own personal reasons to chat with you today. And I would love for you to kind of let the listeners know about your expertise in the wonderful world of tarot. Could you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Richard Reich Kuykendall, and I've been doing tarot readings for about 30 years. And I also did my doctoral dissertation on the history and meaning of the tarot.
Wow. That's just absolutely incredible. And I feel like 30 years ago, at least in the Western world, tarot was a very taboo, maybe even dark topic.
Yes. And hopefully we'll get to talk about that.
Yes, I would love to talk about that. I'd love to kind of go that direction. So for those listeners who may not be fully aware, what is tarot? What are oracle cards? Can you kind of give the lowdown on what they are, generally speaking, and then we can tap into the energetic component?
Okay. Well, what tarot is depends on different times in history. From the 1400s to the 1700s, it was basically just a game people played. From what I've read in different history books, it seems like it was something along the lines of a bridge, you know, but different. But anyway, then in the 1700s, a gentleman by the name of Atea, a Frenchman, from about 1770 to 1791, started writing books on tarot for use in doing readings on people. And that's kind of when that began in the 1700s. And then it wasn't until the 1900s, the early 1900s, actually the very end of the 1800s, the beginning of the 1900s, it became associated with the occult. So that's 500 years after it began, that it began to be associated with the cult.
Wow. And now, what do people see tarot as? What did people use it for today?
Well, people mainly use it today for doing readings, and that's what I do. And anyway, that's what most people use them for.
And these readings, they shed insight to your life, or how does that work?
Yeah, I think that the main thing readings do is they give insight into a person's life, and it's done in the reading itself. The reader uses their own intuition, guided by the meaning of the cards, and there are 78 cards in the deck, and so that's 78 possible meanings. But then we also use, many readers also use reverse meanings of cards, so that gives 156 possibilities. So to me, when I've compared it like to people that do psychic readings or clairvoyant readings and things like that, I think they're a lot more general than what I can do with tarot. I can get really specific. And oftentimes after I do reading, people will say, that's exactly what's happening in my life right now.
So what about the naysayers who say, well, that is just so general and, you know, that could apply to anything. Well, how do you kind of counter that?
I say, let me give you a reading and let's find out how general it was.
Wow. So in particular, you're able to look at the cards depending on whether they're, you know, right side or reverse, and are able to really tap into specific things, events, people that are happening in other people's lives.
Yes. But I want to say one thing. I don't see myself as a fortune teller, because in readings, I always come to what is known as the outcome card, which is kind of what's going to happen in the future. But the future, that outcome card, is only the future that will happen if they continue on their present course.
Right. Okay.
So if it's a good outcome, well, stay on the course. And if it's not a good outcome, then you have to think of what you need to change so it doesn't end up there.
So one of the things that I'm kind of thinking about is I recently watched this movie called Wine Country. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a bit of a chick flick.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, so there's the scene where the tarot reader comes to the house that they're having the girls' weekend at, and she pretty much, you know, that they draw the death card, and she kind of goes through this whole thing where she's like, this is all the bad stuff in your life. This is all the bad stuff in your life. What about that? This is kind of the pop culture, you know, way that tarot is shown. What about that piece of it, and how do you kind of counter the idea that the death card may appear, and you know, there's the whole death is new beginnings thing, but how do you counter that?
Well, first of all, when I do a reading, it's very rare you'd get all those cards. I mean, there's only one death card in the whole deck, and there's 78 cards, and like I said, if you have reverse meanings, there's 156. And so it's very unlikely that you get the death card. And when you get the death card upright, I usually say, and there have been a couple times when I've done readings and I find out that that person just lost a loved one.
Oh, okay.
So the death is literal. But in most cases, death means like the end of a relationship, the end of a job, the end of a phase of your life. And then if the death card is reversed, it doesn't even mean that a person's going to die. It means that's not going to happen. But you're right. In popular culture, like in television or in movies, whenever they show the tarot, they'll show like the devil card and death card and all that kind of negative stuff. And that's what keeps people in the mindset that it's something of the occult.
You know, do you believe that elemental forces or energetic forces are at play when people are getting the reading? How does their energy play into it?
Well, I'll tell you about the elementals in a minute, but I think it's their own energy is what's playing into it. And I see that myself through my intuition and the meaning of the cards, tap into their energy. And that's how I'm able to read what's going on in their lives. As far as elementals, is what I think of when I think of the elementals, the tarot is divided into two parts. There's what's called the major arcana or the trump cards, which are the first 22, and they're just picture cards. Kind of like the Joker in a regular deck of cards. You know, the Joker's different from the suits. Then there's the suit cards, and each of the suits is informed by one of the four elements. So the suit of cups is the element of water. The suit of swords is the element of air. The suit of rods or wands is the suit of fire. And the suit of pentacles, and I'm going to talk about that in a second, is actually the suit of the earth. Now, I wanted to say something about pentacles. Pentacles were never on tarot cards until the early 1900s. Before that, they were always just the suit of coins.
Oh, wow.
And so what happened is when the occult, and it was a group of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, got a hold of it, they started putting pentacles or pentagrams on the coins. So that's another problem when you're doing tarot and they see those, they think, oh, it's satanic or something, you know, but that's yeah. not how they originally were.
Well, that's really interesting. And so how did the occult affect the whole process in general? I mean, did it tend to, you know, I mean, where was their backstory? How did they get involved?
Well, what happened, just to take one group, which is the most famous group, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn had a number of people that did tarot cards. Arthur Waite of the Waite Rider deck made a deck, and today it's Rider was the publisher, so now they people call it the Waite Smith deck, because Pamela Coleman Smith was the artist and Arthur Waite was the designer. Then Aleister Crowley, who was also a member of the Golden Dawn, he designed a deck, and the artist for his was Lady Frieda Harris. Others, MacGregor Mathers was another member, and they made a Golden Dawn deck. And they used the tarot in their rituals. They did not use it for divination or doing readings. They did it specifically for rituals. And they were, you know, they were like an order like the Masons and some of these groups. And so they had secret rituals that they did with them.
And so if they did these secret rituals, and then people just assumed that they were almost demonic or something like that because they were using
right. And then plus, you know, you start seeing decks that have pentagrams on them and stuff like that, and it starts looking different. I remember one time a couple years ago, I had two people came in the store where I work, and one of the women was a Christian from Israel, and the other woman was a friend of hers from the States here, and she came in for a reading. I invited her to join us, you know, if her friend was willing, you know, and her no problem with her with friend from Israel seeing whatever came up, but she refused. And I asked her why, and she said she wouldn't have anything to do with with something that had the devil in it. And mm-hmm. I said, well, you read the Bible? She said, of course I do. I said, well, the devil's all through there. It's only one time in the tarot. And anyway, she didn't do it anyway. But
that's a really good perspective. And so many of these different resources or tools or whatnot have so much weight in the way of what popular culture has kind of assigned with them in the past. So that's just a really good perspective. Now, one of the things that I've noticed a lot more of lately is that there are a lot of oracle cards that are coming out.
Right.
You know, beyond tarot. What do you think about that? How do you feel about that?
Well, I like them. I at our work, we have this whole basket full of different kind of oracle cards. And a lot of times oracle cards are a lot easier. I mean, they're user friendly for an individual because, you know, with tarot, it can be pronounced either way, like tomato, tomato, you know. But anyway, tarot cards take a lot of education. You have to learn the meanings of them and everything. And so it takes a lot of education to do it. But oracle cards are user-friendly in that all you need to do is you can shuffle the cards and just pull a card for the day. And it's supposed to be an oracle. In other words, something that is telling you some truth for the day. And some of them will have you pull like two or three cards or something like that. But it's very different than tarot in terms of having a very specific kind of reading. In most cases, oracle cards won't tell you your situation in life and how to deal with it or how to resolve issues and things like that. But tarot does. And so oracle cards to me are more of something to give you inspiration for the day.
Right. Like a mantra or an affirmation or something like
sure.
that.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we talk about like intuition and being maybe divinely guided. Where do you have two questions? How do you clear your energy and where do you gather your insight or kind of your intuitive nature into what the cards are telling you?
Well, how I've, it's been a long process, you know, since I've been doing it around 30 years. You know, in the beginning, I had certain rituals I went through where a certain way and that and prepare a certain way. And then I had different views and things. But more recently, I've tried to be almost totally intuitive in that I lay out my cards not according to any certain layout, because a layout will have meanings. For instance, if you're doing Celtic cross, famous layout for tarot cards, most any tarot reader will know how to do that particular layout. Each position has a meaning. For instance, there's a position called relationships. And so what happens is when the tarot card falls into the relationship thing, whatever that card is, modified by relationships. You know what I'm saying? So,
wow. Yeah.
So it kind of tweaks the meaning of the actual card by the position it's in.
Right.
So what I've done is I've gotten away from doing that, and I just do a spread that has no positions named, no time element named, because in the Celtic cross you have the recent past, the near future, and so forth, which are time elements. I just lay out the cards. I lay out 10 cards and they're not really in a specific pattern as such. And there's no meaning to the places where they're put. And so I just completely rely on my intuition of the meaning of the card and the timing of the card and what it applies to, whether it applies to relationship or what it applies to. And I like doing that a lot better.
I recently went to a reader and she laid out the cards, and I've been to many over the years. And my first experience was down in San Diego. And actually the woman was so spot on with knowing nothing about me. And what she kind of saw and what she predicted was like above and beyond anything that I think she could have gotten from cards. So that was interesting to me. It was like, well, how does she, where is she getting this energy from? And then I had a different situation with this more recent reader that I went to where she laid the cards out. Same thing. It wasn't a classic Celtic cross or anything like that. And and what she said was really timely and applicable. And in the end, I said, could I take a photo of the cards? And she said no, because the card, what she saw on the cards wasn't at all what she was telling me. And I was curious about that.
That's very weird. See, I always, after I do a reading, ask the person to take a picture of the cards. And the reason why I do that is I say, some of the things that I've touched on today, especially if they're having to do with, because even though I don't have any positions or anything, I always have what I call the outcome card, you know. And so they have to, they take a picture of that, and I tell them to remember those cards and what we've talked about, and then one day, you might see that outcome actually manifested.
Wow. And I was kind of mind blown by the fact that she was, that she said no. You know, I was kind of like, well, that's suspicious. I thought kind of the same thing, because in the past, I've always had somebody so distinctly reference the card and what the card means.
Right.
And I was curious to see if you ever veer out of that, or if it's always what's in the cards.
No, it's always in the cards. I mean, I can modify it, and the reason why I can do that is no card has one meaning.
Right.
So since the cards have different meanings, it's the intuition that tells you which one goes for this particular reading.
And so where does that come from? How do you get that? I mean, I kind of know or have a sense of where my own intuition regarding things in my own life comes from. And even when I'm out in a group setting or something like that, picking up on different cues or something. But how does that work for you with a perfect stranger you've maybe never met before?
Well, I definitely believe in spirit, God, however you want to refer to it. And I feel like I'm led by spirit to do what I'm doing, and in my intuition and so forth.
Well, that definitely makes a lot. I think a lot of people can relate to the feeling of trusting a greater power.
Right.
So what advice do you have for people who want to get started? And what would you say for people who might be listening that are like completely afraid?
Okay. As far as getting started, I'll just tell a quick story. How I learned 30 some years ago. Anyway, I teach this thing called Spirit Wind, where we study all different kinds of spiritual paths and philosophies and things like that. And the first year I was doing it, I've been doing it for 30 years too. And the first year I did it, on my birthday, they had a birthday party for me. And one of the women there was a tarot reader, and she gave me my first reading as a tarot present. And then it wasn't just the reading. What she did is then she gave me three of her tarot cards. And she said, I just want you to spend some time this week. Just put them in your pocket and look at them whenever you get a chance. And she kept doing that week after week until she had given me her whole deck, and she told me I could keep it. And I learned the cards that way. And then after that, I got some books to learn about how to do the spreads and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's the easiest way to learn. I mean, it takes time, but that's the easiest way. And for people that have problems with it, I don't know, not everyone would like this, but as far as I would say Judeo-Christian people from those traditions, and even Muslims for that matter, the Tarot developed during a time when there was only the church. In the 1400s in northern Italy, where the tarot cards originated, all there was at that time was the church. There was not even a Protestants or anything. It was just the Catholic Church. And because of that, the tarot is full of biblical imagery. And though Jews and Muslims aren't Christians, they do know biblical imagery from the Quran and from the Hebrew Bible. And those images are all in there. For instance, the strength card that right now has a woman subduing a lion, but not out of brute strength, just holding its head and that, originally had the picture of Samson slaying a lion. And if you go back to all these things, you find that it's just full of biblical imagery. And to me, if a person, you know, is open to considering that, they can at least, it can help towards them not thinking that they're evil.
Right, right. Well, what about people who are just afraid of what it's going to tell them?
Oh, yeah. Well, what I tell them is, if you remember the story, A Christmas Carol, three spirits come to Scrooge in the night, and the last one that comes is the spirit of Christmas future. And the spirit takes him to the graveyard, and he sees his headstone, and he sees his name on the headstone. And he asks the spirit, is this the future that must be or the future that may be? And the spirit doesn't answer him. The next thing he knows, he wakes up in his bed. It's Christmas morning. And what does he do? He goes out. He throws money out the window, tells him to buy a turkey for the Cratchits and all that stuff. And what he basically did is he changed the future. And so I tell a person, no matter how scary a reading might seem, the outcome is always up to them. They can always change it, just like Scrooge changed it.
The outcome is always up to them. That's just so true of life.
Right. And once they know that, there's nothing to be afraid of.
Wow. I love that. That is definitely very inspirational. Now, kind of along that topic, do you feel like in the world are changing their perspectives for alternative medicine? Do you believe that people are maybe becoming enlightened or more intuitive in general? Do you agree with that? What have you seen in 30 years?
Well, I was reading not too long ago Will Durant's History of Philosophy, and he made a comment in there when he was talking about Plato that the thing that gave the Greek people philosophy was leisure. You know, when you think of people that are in, like, for instance, third world countries today, when they're just struggling to put a roof over their head and food in their mouth, or if you think of people like in places, war-torn places like Kuwait and Syria, and these different places around the world that are war-torn, those people are just thinking of survival. In order for people to, it's kind of sad when you think about it, but in order for people to become enlightened, they have to have the room in their life to have that.
Wow.
And if you're struggling just to survive, there's no room in there to pursue a spiritual path that leads to enlightenment.
Wow. Privilege. Yeah, that definitely plays into that for certain. Absolutely. And such a good point that you bring up. I think sometimes in the Western world, in the, you know, first world, we don't consider that as because we are with privilege. So what about the fact that some of these medicines, and we can start talking about Reiki, chakra work, tarot, how they all acupuncture, acupressure, some of these Eastern modalities and things like that. How do they work together? And do you feel that people are becoming more receptive to them?
Yeah. I mean, I am also a Reiki master, and I see all of those modalities. And besides Reiki, there's healing touch, there's other things, you know, and there it's all energy work. And I believe that, I just got through teaching a 4-week class on the chakras, and that involves energy work as well. And I believe that, you know, the energy of intuition that is also involved in the tarot.
And so how can people who maybe feel completely disconnected with this notion at all, how can they start to get in touch with their intuitive self?
Well, a good place would be to start reading some stuff in whatever they're drawn to. I mean, some people are going to be drawn to energy healing. Some people will be drawn to doing readings or having readings. For instance, I just talked to a good friend of mine today, Paul Miner. He's an amazing numerologist. And as a matter of fact, you know, he's retired. I mean, he still does it on the side, but he used to work with me, and a lot of times people would come to him instead of me because they're not afraid of numbers.
Right. And people can relate to that. And they see numbers. Sometimes people start seeing repeating numbers. I always look at the clock when it's 12:10 or something like that. What does it mean?
Right.
So, but that you bring up an interesting point, because I often, just being in kind of the hippie realm that I'm in, I have friends and stuff that will come to me with that kind of thing. And they'll be like, I look at the clock at 11:23 every day. And I do think that that is just one way that they're starting to tap into this idea that energetically there is something bigger at play, a bigger force at play. And I love when people start to become receptive to these messages that are all around us.
Yeah, definitely.
As a matter of fact, tomorrow night, I'm actually leading a workshop in nature at the Dave Moore Trail. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing. We're going to be doing some Shinrin Roku forest bathing, just to kind of silence, to hear and see what else might be there, what else might be coming for you, which is kind of probably a lot of what you do, I would assume.
Yeah, probably.
On that note, I do want to see if you can share how people can get in touch with you. I do have national listeners. How can they get in touch with you for things? And how about the local listeners as well?
Okay. Well, one thing I can do, I do readings, long distance readings. I do them via email, where a person can contact me via email and with what they want me to find out for them. And then I do the reading myself, and then we connect by phone after that. And then I send them the reading via email, and then we talk about it over the phone. And my email address is the letter R, then Kuykendall, which is K-U-Y, K-E-N-D-A-L-L @minister.com.
All right. And I will definitely put that in the show notes as well. And then what about for locals? Where can they go to get in touch with you?
Well, locally, I work at Forever Enlightened, and that's in downtown Auburn. And the phone number there at Forever Enlightened is, let's see. Well, they can reach me at Forever Enlightened at 530-863-8059.
Okay, and I will put that in the show notes as well. Another question that's coming, you know, what is the process of doing your, did you say dissertation or thesis in Tarot? How did that come to be? How did you pick that, and how did that work?
Well, it was kind of hard to pass it through the dissertation committee, you know.
I bet. That's what I was thinking.
Well, it's kind of unusual, but anyway, I made a case because I don't know if you're familiar with Matthew Fox.
I'm not.
Matthew Fox is a, he was a Catholic priest that ended up getting booted over his stands on women in the priesthood and things like that. And he's now an Episcopal priest, and he's written over 30 books. He had a doctoral program. He originally taught at Holy Names College, Holy Names University in Oakland. But anyway, he started this doctoral program, and I, joined it, enrolled in it. And one of the classes that was required was called Artist Meditation. And what it was a class where instead of meditation in lotus position, you know, sitting, you did meditation while you were doing art.
Wow.
So what I did was as part of that, I did illustrations of all of the tarot cards myself.
Wow.
And so I showed them to that. And I said, what I was going to do is write text that went with the cards that showed the history and the meaning of each card.
Wow.
And so finally they thought, okay, we'll let you do it. And so I.
Wow. Yeah. You're definitely highly knowledgeable, above and beyond anything that I've ever experienced. So I have one last thing, and you can absolutely, of course, say no, but I think this might be fun for the listeners. If you have a deck handy, would you be willing to draw a card for me and just see what it says?
Sure. I just got to go get a deck. It's in the other room, but we'll see what we get.
Ooh, that would be interesting. One, you could grab just one card like that.
Yeah, we can do that. I'm taking this.
A good one.
Well, we never know. And I'll tell you how I would interpret it. Okay. You, what I pulled for you, it's the Seven of Cups. And
so my cup at the overflow.
Yeah. The Seven of Cups is the card of imagination. And I picked it upright too, so that's a good thing. And
it's the card of what?
Imagination.
And okay, because it cut out right when you said it. Okay.
So it's imagination, and that would mean that you're probably, and I guess, I mean, coming up with doing this podcast and everything, that you're a very imaginative and creative person.
Nailed it.
So that's what that card would say.
Wow, that was just so fun. So that's how it gives you insight to people, as you look at that, and that's what you then that's kind of the realm in which you're working with.
Yeah. So I'd invite you sometime to come in, and I'll give you a reading.
I'd love to do that. That would just be wonderful. And I know we've met in person before, and you definitely have all of the good spirit vibes. That's for sure.
That's good. Thank you.
Well, I had such a great time learning more about Tarot with you today. And we could say Tarot or Tarot, but not Tarot.
Right. Although I get some.
And I... And I just really look forward to, you know, as I'm sure we're going to get a lot of listener questions off of this episode. And so I'd love to have you back sometime to dive into more what the listeners are curious about, and also just to continue even in our journey together as well.
Sure, that'd be great.
I'll include all of the show notes for how people can get in touch with you, and we will be in touch soon.
Okay, thank you very much. You take care.
Bye-bye.
This has been a BU Find Happy podcast. For more inspiration, check out the links.